Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Wednesday, April 25th, 2017. We're obviously here with our second episode of the week, previewing the crucial Game 5 between the Clippers and Jazz in the first round of the NBA playoffs. That's tonight. And then tomorrow, in the middle of our week, we'll actually loop back, probably with a little bit more of an in-depth episode than today's, since we'll have a fresh new game to talk about. Then we'll close out the week on Thursday and Friday, getting ready for Game 6 and a potential Game 7. So, like I said, probably have a little bit more of an in-depth episode tomorrow than today. We definitely had a long and in-depth episode yesterday talking about the events of the weekend. Game 3, Clippers big win in Utah. Game 4, Clippers blowing that late lead to the Joe Johnson-led Utah Jazz to tie the series. And then in between, finding out that Blake Griffin would be done for the season with that toe injury. So part of the reason why I say that we'll have a little more to talk about tomorrow is that a lot of what we're doing right now is rehashing a lot of the same lineups, the same decisions, and there are only a few different areas really that key adjustments could swing the series, other than just continuing to see two fairly evenly matched teams go head-to-head and, you know, claw at each other to try to come out on top. Even in other contested series that are tied 2-2 going into Game 5 like this one is, we don't always see four competitive games like we've seen in the first four games of this series, with every game being in single digits. So these teams have definitely proven themselves to be fairly evenly matched, even though a lot of what has happened in this series has kind of been defined as the unexpected. Utah winning a game in LA without Rudy Gobert, which people didn't think that they'd be able to win even with him. The Clippers winning a game in Utah without Blake Griffin. The Jazz finishing that comeback victory over the Clippers in Game 4 without Gordon Hayward. Even in that Game 4, when you're thinking Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan are going to lead the Clippers, but can they survive while Paul and Jordan are resting? The Clippers bench actually outperformed the starters, which you definitely wouldn't expect, because Utah throughout the season has had a terrific deep second unit but doesn't have the same star power that the Clippers have at the top. So definitely we've seen a lot of unexpected storylines reign in this series. But there are a few things really to focus on going into this Game 5. The first and most obvious surface one is the injury situation for each side. Rudy Gobert played in Sunday's Game 4. It was his first game back after being injured early in Game 1 of this series, but he was limited. He only played 24 minutes. He looked pretty good. We'll see, having only had one day off and it being a travel day coming into LA, if he's still moving well, if he's a little fatigued, if he's a little rusty, if that minutes restriction stays at 24, or if it's raised or even lifted altogether. We'll also see Gordon Hayward, who played just 9 minutes in Game 4 with food poisoning. Is he feeling totally better? Is he not at 100% but able to play? Is he still on an IV and he's going to be limited or perhaps miss the game? We don't know right now. I'd expect that he'll probably be okay, because he was able to give it a go in Game 4, but obviously he wasn't feeling well and they had to pull him out and he didn't play in the second half. But that leads me to believe that he was at least able to give it a go, that any sort of progression that you'd expect him to make in 48 hours of recovering from something like food poisoning, he should be fairly good to go, if not at 100%, definitely to play a full game just in a limited capacity in Game 5. Now on the Clippers side, obviously Blake Griffin remains out and will be out for the rest of the postseason, but Austin Rivers, who was originally slated to return in Game 4, but then it was announced that he wouldn't play in Game 4 and that Game 5 was looking doubtful as well, now he is going to play in tomorrow's Game 5, although there will be some sort of minutes restriction on him as he comes back from that hamstring strain. But he's a crucial piece for the Clippers. And I wrote about this on Clips Nation today, that he kind of gives them help in three different areas that they might need in this series. So the first one is as an option at point guard. And this was looking like a much bigger deal after Game 1, where Raymond Felton really struggled offensively. You know, he's been shooting poorly for the last several months. He failed to space the floor in Game 1, and it really collapsed the Clippers' second-unit offense around Blake Griffin. But Felton has been hitting his threes lately. He's been playing tremendously. So having Rivers as an option at backup point guard isn't as much of a big deal with Felton playing the way he is. Felton has really been one of the Clippers' best players in this series, at least on the supporting cast. Now, one area where Rivers might be less used over the course of the regular season is as a legitimate option at shooting guard with the starting lineup. Because you can put him in at shooting guard instead of J.J. Redick, and while he does a lot of different things than Redick, he's not the shooter, but he's a little bit of a better on-ball defender, and he's more aggressive going to the rim. He's a legitimate option at, you know, starters' minutes in the shooting guard position. And with how J.J. Redick and Jamal Crawford have struggled in this series, that is a huge deal for the Clippers. Because in Game 1, part of the reason why the Clippers weren't able to close that game out down the stretch is that they just could not find a fifth quality player to put on the floor. Like I said, Raymond Felton, who's had a strong series, was really struggling in that game, especially on the offensive end. Jamal Crawford was having a bad game. J.J. Redick was having a bad game. And with Rivers hurt, you don't really have another option at shooting guard. You're not going to bring in a third-string player like Allen Anderson or Wesley Johnson there. Luke Mbamute, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan are rounding out the lineup. And the Clippers just did not have another guard who was playing well to put on the floor. Austin Rivers gives you another normally pretty reliable option in that slot. And then where Austin helps you is just as a versatile, multi-positional defender. Because we've seen him start games at point guard, shooting guard, and small forward for the Clippers this season. And against a team like Utah that has so many scoring threats, with obviously in the starting lineup, George Hill, Joe Ingles, and Gordon Hayward, but then off the bench, playing Rodney Hood and Joe Johnson, and then even Raul Neto in spots, who has played well against the Clippers in the last couple of years, it's really nice to have another capable defender. Now, Paul and Felton have obviously both been good defensively this series, and they're both very good defensive players, but they're both very undersized. And once the Clippers get into wing defense from those shooting guard, small forward, and power forward positions, they really only have Luke and Mbamute. J.J. Redick is okay, but he's not a great defender. Jamal Crawford is a bad defender. And they don't really have other players to play those positions. At power forward, it's been Mo Spates and Paul Pierce, neither of whom you really want on good perimeter scorers. And so Austin Rivers gives you another weapon there to combat Utah's scoring punch on the perimeter. Now, what he doesn't solve is the Joe Johnson problem, because he's a little undersized, but we'll get to that in the next segment. But those are the ways that Austin Rivers really impacts the game for the Clippers. He gives them another option at point guard if for some reason Felton isn't playing well. He gives them a legitimate alternative at shooting guard if they need a fifth player to close down the stretch and Redick and Crawford are both playing poorly. And he's almost like a utility flex play for Doc Rivers, where he can defend multiple positions. And I think we'll actually even see the Clippers play plenty of minutes in the last few games of this series with Austin Rivers at small forward and Luke Mbamute at power forward going in like a small lineup like that when they aren't able to go big with Mo Spates. Now, another factor, like I said, is going to be the Joe Johnson thing, because the Clippers have just not been able to do anything against him defensively. Even in Game 4, when Gordon Hayward was sick and Doc Rivers was actually able to use Luke and Bamute on Johnson, ISO Joe just got wherever he wanted on the floor. He got the looks he wanted, and even when they were difficult, contested, fall-away looks, he made all of them. And when the Clippers threw double teams at him, he made the right pass, and Utah they're an unselfish team. They move the ball well, and they found open shooters. And guys like Rodney Hood, who shoot 37% from deep, guys like Joe Ingles, who shoot 44% from deep, they're going to make those open shots. And this is where one thing that Utah does as a team kind of interestingly comes into play. So if you've listened to all of the playoff coverage from this podcast, you know that before the series started, I talked to David Locke, who is the radio announcer for the Utah Jazz, the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast, the guy who the Locked On Network is named after, etc. I talked to David about this series, but one thing that I specifically asked him about was Utah's assist numbers, because it really was interesting to me that they seemed to have no one player average a lot of assists. And a lot of that is the scheme that Quinn Snyder plays, where instead of having one ball dominant point guard who's in charge of distributing, like Chris Paul is for the Clippers, they really play more as a unit offensively. A more of a college-style game, where that's why they play guys like Boris Diaw and Joe Ingles, because they're really good passers within the system at those positions. So George Hill, obviously a good passer, but you're not relying on him to get 10 assists a game. Gordon Hayward can make plays, but again, he's more of a scorer, not a distributor. So you have guys out there around them in Ingles and Diaw who are going to make nice, crafty passes and get 3 or 4 assists in a game if they play enough minutes. Now, Joe Ingles obviously had a terrific game 4 as the primary ball handler and had 11 assists, but the fact that that was the first time a Utah player this season has had a double-digit assist game proves how they normally spread the wealth in the distribution department. And why that matters is because when you send double teams, everyone on the floor is used to handling the ball and making plays for themselves and others. You don't have a guy out there like J.J. Redick who is used to shooting but not doing much else. Or a guy like Luke Mbamute who's used to being wide open but not really tasked with making a play. When you double-team Joe Johnson and he kicks it out to Joe Ingles, you have a capable playmaker. So even if you close out on Ingles, he'll drive and find the open man. Even if you close out on Rodney Hood, on George Hill, on Boris Diaw, they'll be able to penetrate into the gap, draw help, and find open players all over the floor, which is something that a guy like Redick, a guy like Mbamute might struggle, because the Clippers are much more dominant in their passing and offensive creation on one guy in Chris Paul. Now, the Joe Johnson thing is going to be a dilemma. It's possible that the Clippers come into this game using Austin Rivers more on Gordon Hayward and throwing Luke Mbamute on Joe Johnson, and they've come up with something in the last 48 hours that will allow Luke to be more effective against Joe than he was in Game 4. Maybe Doc Rivers opts to go with size and play someone like Brandon Bass, who isn't going to be overpowered by Johnson, and bring help if Johnson drives, and that way you don't have to double on the catch. Maybe he goes with someone like Wesley Johnson, who will be able to test Joe Johnson with his length, because Wesley's going to contest those fallaway shots and those floaters, but then you know you're going to have to bring help because Joe is going to physically overpower Wesley. There aren't a lot of great answers. The Clippers just don't have a guy who's been able to stop Joe Johnson. He's been absolutely terrific in this series. And ultimately, it might come down to just throwing different looks at him so that he can't get comfortable. So you go with Luke for a few plays, then you bring Brandon Bass in for a few plays, then you bring Wesley Johnson in for a few plays, and maybe you even do something like, if Utah is playing a lineup that doesn't have as many great shooters, like if Boris Diaw is playing, for example, you would put someone down there like an Austin Rivers or a Raymond Felton, who is undersized but really pesky and energetic, and then bring double teams and, you know, try to just make him uncomfortable and throw different looks at him over the course of the game so that he can never really get into that rhythm like he did late in the fourth quarter of game four. And what, you know, I think we should just take a moment to realize that I don't think anyone expected us to be sitting here previewing game five, talking about the Clippers throwing different looks at Joe Johnson over the course of the game to prevent him from getting comfortable and taking over. Even, and I was ready for Joe Johnson to have a good series because, you know, I like Joe Johnson. I think he's had a good year. He's a guy who I would have liked the Clippers to target if they had had the money. But I don't think anyone expected us to be getting to this point where he has been Utah's best player in this series. Both games that they've won have been because he took over late in the game, down the stretch of game one and then hitting the buzzer beater, and down the stretch of game four orchestrating that comeback, both scoring and then distributing when the Clippers started sending double teams. If it wasn't for Joe Johnson, if you just take this series minus Joe Johnson, the Clippers just swept in four games. That's the impact that he's had as a veteran free agent signing off the bench. If you take him off this Utah Jazz team, the Clippers just swept them in four games. And I'm not saying that would have even been, if you take Johnson off of the Jazz, my series prediction wouldn't have been a sweep. I still would have thought that Utah would take the Clippers to five games like I originally predicted. But just the reality of how these four games have played out. Without Joe Johnson, Utah loses game one, and without Joe Johnson, Utah loses game four. So that's pretty significant for an offseason bench veteran signing. Now, the last thing that I think is important for the Clippers, it's something that I kind of harped on extensively in the last episode, is going to be the sense of urgency. They, even when they were playing well in Game 4, it didn't feel like they were bringing the intensity and fire that they needed to bring in such a crucial playoff game. Knowing that Rudy Gobert was coming back, knowing that you had like a golden, fluky opportunity to steal game four with Gordon Hayward sick and try to close the series out in five, and knowing how important it is to close this series out early to try to get healthy and rested in the second round as much as possible, the Clippers just never played with that edge. And even when they played well, and I know Chris Paul had the great box score, the killer instinct was not there. And so the question is, will the Clippers come into this game five with the killer instinct? Saying, we don't want to go down 3-2. We don't want to be playing two elimination games. Or will the Clippers come into this game thinking, not thinking, but playing like, they know they can afford to lose one more before they're really in trouble? Because in many senses, they needed to win one of the two games in Utah. And part of the adrenaline of losing Blake Griffin led Chris Paul to those insane second half heroics in game three. And the Clippers really needed to lose. They needed to win one of those games in Utah to avoid going down 3-1. Just like they needed to win game two in LA, because you don't want to lose two home games in games one and two. But the games that they didn't really need to win as much, game one, obviously, with the series tied 0-0, and game four, because the Clippers had already gotten their split in Utah, that intensity, that edge, that killer instinct just wasn't there. So do the Clippers view this game as a game that they need to win? I think it is a game that they need to win. I think if they lose this game five, they're probably going to lose the series, because while I don't think Utah can beat the Clippers two out of three times if Chris Paul is playing at his best, I'm also not entirely convinced that you're guaranteed to get Chris Paul at his best in three straight games. And by his best, I mean that killer instinct, point guard mode, where he is turning the corner, attacking the basket with intensity, and getting quality looks for himself or a teammate time and time again, which we saw in the second half of Game 3, and we didn't see as much in Game 4, even though his stat line was okay. Not even okay. He had a good stat line. But we didn't see that killer instinct and that edge. And this is a comparison that I made to Robert and Adithya, two of the editors at Clips Nation. The Clippers are like prey. They're really, really good prey. But they're not predators. So sometimes when their backs are against the wall and someone's hunting them, the Clippers can come up with elite stretches to escape, to survive, to limp away and fight another day. But we've never seen this Clippers team be the predators. We've never seen them go out and step on someone's throat and really be the aggressors and hunters. Routinely, we see them play to the level of their opponent, which means that when they're playing an opponent that is better than them, like when they played Oklahoma City in the second round a few years ago, they'll play terrific basketball and make it a competitive series, even if they end up succumbing to a great hunter. But when they play a team that they should beat more easily, like Houston in the second round 2 years ago, or even Utah in this series, they seem to not quite have it in them to rip the other team's heart out in the moment that they need to. And the Clippers had chances in both games that they lost in this series so far, where you're just thinking, they need to be bringing it right now. They need to go on a run. They need to put this away. I texted a group chat I have with a few Clippers fans in the middle of the third quarter of Game 4. And this is exactly what I said. I said, you need to build a buffer here so that Utah can't come back and win this game on one hot fourth quarter run. And in those minutes with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan on the floor, the Clippers didn't build a buffer so that even as they slowly played better than the Jazz going into the fourth quarter, the lead peaked at 7. If the Clippers had really brought that intensity in the third quarter, they could have had a 12-15 point lead at one point. And that's a lot higher mountain for Utah to climb than a 7-point lead. Now, Utah's run was more than just a run. It was a tremendous stretch of basketball by Joe Johnson, and then when he started distributing more, by the entire Jazz lineup. But if the Clippers had really taken advantage of those stretches late in the first quarter and in the middle of the third quarter when Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan were both out there, and it felt like for some reason the Clippers were just barely surviving when they should have been out there thriving. If the Clippers had built leads in those stretches instead of waiting until the end, they wouldn't have been under so much pressure at the end, whether Utah decided to get hot then or not. But they left the door open, and to Utah's credit, Joe Johnson lowered his shoulder and rammed right through it. I think for the Clippers to win games to close out this series, they're going to need Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan to be the guys, not just in the last few minutes of a game, although they will need that, but throughout the game. You need DeAndre Jordan in the second quarter coming to play help defense and then having that second jump to get back into play and block Derek Favors' layup attempt when the guy driving makes that little dump-off pass. You need DeAndre Jordan coming over to try to block a shot and then having that second jump to get up and get the defensive rebound so that Rudy Gobert doesn't get a put-back dunk. You need Chris Paul aggressively attacking off the pick and roll instead of floating around and ending up deferring to Jamal Crawford for a shot late in the shot clock. These are the things you need in the first and second and third quarters, not just in the last few minutes of the game. And then you especially need them in the last few minutes of the game if it's a close one. That's what I think it'll come down to more than anything. More important than the Joe Johnson matchup. More important than how Austin Rivers fits in the Clippers' plans. I think it's going to come down to really the level of intensity and urgency that we see from Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan. Because being urgent when you're down four with 2 minutes left might not be enough if Utah hits a couple of timely shots, if you make a couple of honest mistakes. But if you bring that urgency for 48 minutes, I still think Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan are good enough with pieces around them, even if J.J. Redick is missing his shots, even if Jamal Crawford is missing his shots, even if Doc Rivers overplays Paul Pierce. Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan are good enough if they bring that urgency and intensity throughout the game to win two of these three games against Utah, to control their own destiny. But if they don't, they might still win. Just like Joe Johnson might have missed that buzzer beater shot in game one. Just like Joe Ingles and Rodney Hood could have missed a couple threes off of kickouts, and Joe Johnson might have not gotten hot and scored 11 points straight in the end of game four. The Clippers could have won those games without the increased intensity. It was possible. They didn't happen to because Utah took advantage of those opportunities. So it's possible that the Clippers can come out without that intensity and still win a game, or maybe even the two games that they need in these next three. If Utah doesn't get hot, doesn't make shots at the right moments, doesn't take advantage. But if the Clippers come out with that intensity that we know they're capable of, if they really play at peak performance, I still think they have it in them to win this series. I'm just waiting to see if they're going to bring it at that level or not. So that's all about all I have for today, preparing for Game 5. Obviously, it's a massive game because whoever wins this is going to go up 3-2 in the series and have a closeout game in Game 6. Whoever loses is facing elimination in Game 6. I think it is especially significant if the Clippers lose this game because it would mean that they'll have an elimination game in Utah. Whereas Utah is obviously more comfortable playing at home. So if they have if they have a closeout game, they're much more likely to close out in Game 6 at home than the Clippers are to close out in Game 6 on the road. And if Utah is facing an elimination game, they're more likely to rally and stay alive with their home crowd behind them than the Clippers are to be able to go in there and put the hammer down and close them out in 6. Now, obviously, any outcome is still possible, but that's just where my mind is that this series, the Clippers should win this Game 5, Utah should win Game 6, and the series probably should go 7, in my mind, with where we are right now. But we'll see. This is a crucial game for the Clippers. We'll be back tomorrow with a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast to talk all about it. In the meantime, you can go ahead and follow me on Twitter, tweet at me, any Clippers questions, any comments, questions, or feedbacks about the podcast, at Lucas J. Han. You can always email me, lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. To follow the Clips Nation blog on Twitter, it's at ClipsNationSBN. You can read the blog at clipsnation.com. You can follow on Facebook by just typing Clips Nation into the Facebook search bar. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.